Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Well, here we go. I don't know how it happened, but it's Friday again, and it brings good news because Michael Harrison is here from Talkers Magazine. Hello there, Michael.
Hey there, Todd, and it is amazing. Fridays just pop out of what seemed like Thursdays.
Yes, it's
profound.
There seems to be a pattern. I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Yeah, yeah. It keeps us sane. Otherwise, can you imagine? We wouldn't know where we are or what we're doing. I mean, the days of the week and months and seasons and the cycle of life. It's just a wonderful merry-go-round.
It should be extended as you get older because weeks turn into minutes as you reach a certain age, and it just goes by so fast. It's like it whips your head around, you know? When you're a kid, a week takes a long time.
Oh, gosh. It's amazing how that works. You know, a summer, summer vacation, long time, two-week vacations at Christmas and spring breaks and the weekend. But no, people have always had trouble coming to terms with time. Those of us in radio are, we sort of have a great respect for time, sort of like people in the railroad business. You know, I don't know if it's that way anymore in transportation, but there was a time when, you know, the railroads invented time. Before the railroads, every town had its own time. And then they realized, the invention of the railroads was the direct technological cause of time zones and standard times
because you could get by with just having one clock in each village up to that point.
But
they didn't have to coordinate.
And now, I mean, it's amazing with GPS and taking into account the fact that time travels at a different pace up where the satellite is than it does on the ground. They have to computerize the difference. These guys are mathematical geniuses. You know, you talk about geniuses, the guys you never hear about, the ones that are behind, say, the creation of something as amazingly magical as GPS. They have to take into account the fact that time, a clock, moves at a different pace above the earth than it does on sea level.
An electronic digital clock moves at a different pace in space?
Yes.
But there's nothing moving.
It has to do with gravity. Gravity is something that messes with space and time. And if you were to be about to be sucked into a black hole, for example, where gravity is infinite, you would just be there in your mind forever. You'd never go in. You'd just be there forever, and everything else would stop.
Does this confirm the whole idea of time, you know, some of the theories of time that we see in sci-fi and that come out of the quantum physics or whatever it is?
Right.
Is this connected to all that? Is that like an indicator that this is, that we are actually going to be able to fly back and forth between time zones?
between time zones. Well, time zones, you know, you don't go to the future.
No, I don't mean
when
our time zones. I mean the time zones of. I want to be able to go. Fly to next week. Can I do that?
The arrow of time goes forward, although the physics of time could go either way. And philosophers and physicists have been trying to figure out why that is. They haven't figured it out yet. All I know is it has something to do with the second law of thermodynamics, but I don't fully understand all that. It has to do with the fact that you can break an egg and make an omelet, but you cannot turn that omelet back into an egg. Things go a certain way, and that's built into the universe. That being said, yes, you can go into the future. There is a way physically where you could go into the future and not suffer the effects of aging, but no one's figured out yet how to go to the past. And going to the future,
that will be quite a GPS when it'll do that.
Yeah, but we can go into the future. If you were to, you know, the guy that was in the space station technically is younger than his twin brother who stayed on the Earth's surface now, because it's because it's not very fast and it's not very high. It's a fraction of a second in terms of he is younger physiologically. He did not age as much. But if he were traveling at the speed of, say, half the speed of light, and he was out there for 20, 30 years, he'd come back and he may have aged. I don't have the exact ratio. It could be maybe 1 year, and he'd come back and everybody would be old. You've seen that meme done in science fiction before, and it is true to the laws of physics. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing. I love that. It just shows how even our own understanding, you know, the apparatus we are given to receive signals as to what reality is based on this compartmentalized reality of what we experience right here, not what existence consists of.
Right. But here in the real world that you and I are in, we are actually traveling through time, but we don't realize it. It doesn't seem profound because we're doing it at the rate of 1 second per second. We're going into the future 1 minute per minute. As we're talking,
that's the dynamic that we're talking about.
If I were talking to you and I were located in zero gravity, you know, a million miles away from the Earth, time would be moving for me at a different pace than it's moving for you. It would be very slight. If I were speeding along, you know, at an immense speed, we could not have this conversation. You talk about the little delay that we have sometimes when our technology is out of sync and you're in one place and I'm in another and we're talking to each other and we trip over each other a little bit. It's not that our timing isn't good. It's that we are literally hearing each other in a different time. If we were located millions of miles apart, it would be impossible to have a conversation like this. It's pretty crazy.
No, it is. It's totally crazy. Can we apply that in some way to politics? Does that give us a better understanding of what's going on now with the Biden-Trump race?
Yeah, it does. It doesn't have to do with time. It has to do with perspective. It has to do with everybody sees reality from their own circumstances. And that's why sometimes political debate is a useless exercise, in mental gymnastics. The truth about politics is more of an empathetic situation where you understand what the other person's reality is to understand why they come to certain political views or they'll vote a certain way.
Right.
When you base it on that, you have much more of a chance of communicating on an even plane than if you just do it based upon ideology in a vacuum, which so much of today's political debate is.
Yes, and nobody's willing to offer that empathy to the other side anymore because they view the other side as a threat, as an existential threat. So how can you come with your heart open to somebody who you see as a danger to your existence?
Got to take a chance. You got to take a chance.
That's what I do. But I don't personalize all this. To me, these are ideas, and we're trying to flesh out ideas, and people should be able to have that conversation.
I hope so. But the fact of the matter is, it's impossible to really do it effectively if you don't personalize it to one extent or another. You probably personalize it more than you realize. You're probably hiding in some type of a protective psychological device. In other words, you think you don't. But you probably
well,
are deeply
I do
feeling.
Know there's part of me that's emotionally connected because I view certain the underpinnings, the foundational principles that make up my position. I view those as being of critical importance. But you know, there's this difference that somebody identified once to me. I don't take myself seriously. I take my work seriously, or something like that. And I like that differential. You know, you care about the things that you care about, but that doesn't mean that you're made important by that. You're still just a dopey person trying to get by.
Yeah, well, you know, it's difficult to be a human being with all of the grand things that we have, our intelligence, our creativity, our uniqueness, our existence. And because we are pretty much a miracle of nature. The most complicated thing that we have ever found so far in reality is the human brain. Mm-hmm. And but on the other hand, if you take yourself too seriously, you lose the whole purpose of humor, of spirituality, of empathy, and humility. I think that humility is such an important quality. And we see the opposite of humility is arrogance. And so many of our political figures today operate by arrogance. And arrogance will bring the strongest of men or women down. If you are arrogant, it will eventually catch up with you.
There you go.
It's an Achilles
heel. All
right,
so let's plug this into some of what went on this week. What's your reaction to the Democrats' rollout of their ticket?
I think that she's a smart choice. That doesn't mean I support her or like her. There are many things about her that, you know, I'm not thrilled about. She's not somebody that I would say is the best bet to be president of the United States. However, from an objective standpoint of analyzing it as a horse race, I think he made a really smart choice. And I think that she'll be a very effective campaigner. I think that she's a tough cookie. I think that she's ruthless in many ways. I think that she has a nice smile and she plays the role of Mamala Kamala. But I think that she's a tough guy. And
yeah. She did that attack on him, and that showed that she could play in that league.
I've had a lot of people say to me, how can he possibly forgive her for that? Because he's a tough guy, too, because he's a politician. They all know politics makes for strange bedfellows. And if you don't understand that, then you don't understand politics. How could a guy like Ted Cruz possibly support Donald Trump when Donald Trump basically called him every name in the book and attacked his father and his wife?
Yes, that's right.
I mean, come
on. That's right.
Think
about
it.
Yeah, none of it's personal in politics, if you're smart, because you have to continue working together. And you might have 90 things that you fight about and 10 you can get along about. And you get along on those things you can get along on.
Exactly. But, you know, we laymen try to humanize these politicians. We try to look at them as if they were our friends. They're not.
Big mistake.
Exactly. And that's something that drives me crazy. Oh, I like her. Kamala is so nice. And what are you kidding me?
Yeah, these are vultures circling over your dying body. They can't wait to devour you.
Ah, oh, gosh. If we all understood that.
It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, yes. I got this from my mother last night, and it was a little frustrating to hear. That was her postmortem on the rollout of Kamala. Oh, isn't she lovely? I think she's got a great smile.
Right.
Really? Wow, she should be president with that smile, eh?
Right. I mean, that's all you need, a great smile. But, and what's crazy about that is there is a degree of logic to it, but only a degree. It gets us in trouble.
It's part of the story.
Yeah.
It's not the whole story. Michael Harrison is here. It's Friday. Quick break. We'll continue on WTIC. WTIC. It's Friday. So Michael Harrison What happened?
I'm laughing at the song that Mike Olko picked up.
Is that all about? Did you tell him to do this? No.
I could read his mind. He and I are sort of on the same frequency. He was playing Whenever I See Your Smiling Face, which was, from what we were talking
James
about.
James Taylor, 1976.
Yeah, Kamala, Mamala Kamala.
Oh, 77, sorry.
Whenever I See Your Smiling Face. She's got a great smile.
Oh, that's about Kamala. She does have a great smile.
Yeah, she does. And I'm weighing that heavily.
And anyone with a smile like that should be president.
Of course.
No, that's the key. that's the key. When you can smile like that, you deserve it. God intended you.
Well, what was it? What was it? Trump said to Carly Fiorina. What's her Fiorina?
Fiorina.
Yeah, he said, "Who wants to look at a face like that?" I shouldn't be laughing at that, but I mean,
no, you shouldn't.
Trump said that
about her.
Not
allowed to even say things like that.
Who would want to look at a face like that? He said something along those lines,
No, he was crueler than that.
It was
really harsh what he said.
God, I wish we were back in the days when we could have really nasty humor without necessarily people getting offended.
Well, that was all we're doing is quoting history.
Yeah, I know.
We're being like a history professor here.
I mean, I'm not for any kind of racial slurs. I'm not for any kind of hurting people. No, I get it. But sometimes a little nasty humor can be very therapeutic.
People are always offended. So even today, the straitjacket has been tightened on what you're allowed to say. Everything is offensive. You can't identify people's differences. You can still make Polish jokes, I think. But aside from that, I'm not sure what's allowed in terms of being, bigoted towards a particular group of people, even if done it with levity. Still, there's people running around talking about how offended they are all the time by everything that's going on. So it doesn't seem to be improving our range of comfort and relaxation. Everybody, the more we ban, the more it seems people see as a threat.
Yeah, and the more it pushes it underground. And when it goes underground, like the physical body, it manifests and metastasizes, if that's the word, and becomes dangerous. There's a reason for venting. There's a reason for humor. There's a reason to let steam off. One of the problems with the far left is they are fascistic about being open-minded.
Yes, that's right. Their compassion is done in a fascist way.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's just, it's crazy. And they don't know it. They have no idea.
Were you called names when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah,
that had
sure.
to do with ethnicity or something? Or height?
A certain degree. I basically got along pretty well as a kid. But, no, there were bullies and there were people that would make fun of different things about me. But fortunately, I grew up without any kind of a major, deformity or something, that some kids really have to go through life with a tough time. I wasn't fat. I wasn't terribly tall. I wasn't terribly short. Hey, shorty. I didn't have that. But yeah, I think every kid has a degree of bullying that they have to put up with. And some kids, of course, are bully magnets. Some people.
Well, this is the interesting thing because we've had decades now of trying to squeeze this out of the culture and everybody getting all this diversity training and kids being told that they can't say those things. And what do we have? We have bullying, skyrocketing bullying, apparently.
Yeah, is that weird?
And it goes back to what you're saying about the demand is there. The marketplace wants to be hateful. And if you take away certain words that you're not allowed to say, people move on to other ways of bullying.
Or new words. Yeah, because words are only words. Yeah, if you ban certain words, then people will find new words.
There's
and then those new
others.
Words, right?
They can even make up new ones.
Exactly. New slurs to replace those that are no longer usable. And I are walking very close to the edge on this conversation.
Which edge?
The one that leads to... okay, we will not... pull me back up, will you? I'm hanging by my fingernails here.
Well,
isn't it exciting? Isn't it exciting when it gets... isn't it exciting live, spontaneous radio, knowing a slip of the tongue... and you're ruined for life.
Well, I feel all the time that I've made the slips of the tongue, and nobody says boo, so I don't feel like I know where that edge is.
You
Michael Harrison is here.
It
it's news time. Stay with us on WTIC. WTIC, Fridays. Michael Harrison joins us first hour from Talkers Magazine. That is the trade journal of the talk radio industry that Michael has published for hundreds of years, and it continues to thrive after all these years and all these changes that the industry goes through, Michael.
Right. It was a spinoff of Benjamin Franklin's Poor Richard's Almanac, and I went off on my own. I worked for him for a number of years. And
what was Franklin like?
He was a rogue. He was a real rogue. If he knew how, you know, we idolize, well, we don't idolize them anymore. We're in a new era. We no longer idolize the founding fathers. They are terrible people.
We knew
and I guess by
how
saying,
much contempt we have for those racists.
Do you remember the first time we did our little thing together on WTIC was on the 4th of July, and you and I were just chatting. And I was telling you I was on a Boston radio station that morning, and I was telling you that it was 4th of July, and I was telling you that I was telling everybody about all of the faults that people don't know about the founding fathers, and you thought it was cool. Could you come on with you that day? And we went through all these things that were easy to find out. Now that's just considered to be an average everyday conversation. It was kind of, you know, we were ahead of the curve.
I guess. I don't remember that at all.
You don't remember? I was telling you that Benjamin Franklin was an exhibitionist.
No.
He had a place, I think it was in Philadelphia, where he had an apartment that was right on the street level. In those days the buildings are right on the sidewalks, and he had a big bathtub. And only wealthy people really could afford bathtubs and baths, and because there was no real plumbing or he would sit there naked and bathe himself in front of the window. I wasn't there. I was working remote back in those days. But he would cause all kinds of discomfort for the women in the community who would be walking by. And
you mean he was right at eye level? They could just look in and see him.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
Well, it was hot, as I understand it, in those days. They didn't have air conditioning.
Oh, the old days were disgusting. The old days were disgusting. Yeah. We had we had no air conditioning. You wore the same clothes all the time. There were no dry cleaners. You know, when you see
And they had heavy clothes, right?
Right.
You weren't allowed to. You didn't wear tank tops because was hot and sweaty. Oh, you wore the same wool from winter, didn't you?
People stunk. They didn't have deodorant and things of that nature. And the streets were covered with horse manure. That if you wore a white outfit, a white shirt or something, you weren't walking around the city. You come home, it would be sort of dark.
Do you think, Michael, that our sense of smell was somehow numbed to aromas? Because I watch these old movies and they show people from 200 years ago having an argument with each other standing 6 inches away from each other. I said they would have to be at least a room away yelling through a window or something.
That's
because
very
the stench
very
of the breath and everything must have been horrible.
They didn't have toothpaste. They didn't. You know, it's interesting. I'm shifting gears based on what you just said, that many of those films that you see where actors are talking to each other's faces, a lot of that is drama because it frames it better than if they're talking across the room. Spencer Tracy and Frederick March and Inherit the Wind, the Scopes Trial, what makes you the speaker for God? You know, that type of thing. And they're sweating each other's face. Or, of course, love scenes between men and women in those days. Scarlett O'Hara, Rhett Butler, Vivian Leigh, and, you know, Clark Gable. There are so many stories about how actors, two actresses couldn't stand to work with each other because their breath stank so.
Oh, Bogart, right?
I heard it was about Clark Gable that Vivian Leigh suffered through Gone with the Wind because of the close-ups that she had to do with Clark Gable. You know.
Well, hang on one sec. How about all of them smoking cigarettes nonstop? It's the most horrible thing to smell somebody up close who's just had a cigarette.
So basically, maybe they were blessed with that biological process known as olfactory fatigue, which is what you're describing, when the brain says, okay, I'm not smelling this anymore. And now it's called smell blindness. Did you see the commercial on TV where the people have a dog and they don't, and they think their car smells good, but then they show the scene that the car looks like a traveling dog, where the whole car is a dog, because their car stinks like a dog, but they don't know it because they have smell blindness. And this is a true thing, that you cannot smell something for long before it's called olfactory fatigue.
So they didn't know how bad, getting back to 200 years ago, if you actually were working in the same space with Benjamin Franklin,
right,
then you would just be thankful he was in the tub, regardless of how many people he showed.
That's true. That's true. Well, he was, you know, he was kind of an aristocrat. You know, he took a bath. A lot of people did not take baths. Or here's a worse thing. You know what people did? They would share the bath water with everybody in their family. Because hot water was a hard commodity to get into the kitchen. The bathtub would be rolled into the kitchen, and they'd fill it with hot water.
That's
and
right.
each member of the family would
one
take turns.
One pot at a time, right?
Right.
No wonder they took a bath really seriously back then. It must have been so delightful. They had one day where they weren't appalled to be in the same space with each other.
It was bath day. Well, don't you remember when you were a kid? I mean, you were a kid once, right?
Yeah, but we had baths, I think, once every day or two.
Nah, you had a bath once a week.
No.
Your generation, maybe your mother was fastidious and took really good care of you. But most of the kids I know from that generation, they'd have Friday night or Saturday was bath night. There was a special night each week when you had the bath. And that was it.
I don't know. Well, you're several months older than me.
Ben Franklin. You know, I was an intern.
That's right.
I worked with him as an intern.
But kids don't produce as much ugly odor as adults do.
Oh, really? Have you ever been? You don't remember what it was like being in the locker room in back in school?
Well, that's true.
Or a school, on a school, you ever ride
but
a school
that,
bus?
But that was years worth of aroma, all stored in the cheap carpet that they had there.
Oh, yeah. Pretty smelly. But, you know, we take for granted some of the things that we have in life today. We think that we're going through tough times. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so bring me back to that movie then, where they're having the fight on screen and they're standing 6 inches away from each other 200 years ago. How far apart do you think they actually stayed? Or are you suggesting that they really didn't mind being near each other despite the stench because they were they had an immunity to
I'm stop. Saying it could be any number of things. It could be olfactory fatigue, or it could be that the movies do not depict reality, because when you frame a shot, whether it's a photograph or a film or a video, you have to be closer together than you normally would
to get everybody in the picture.
Right.
Otherwise, well,
no, but also for it to look normal.
For
it to look normal. You never stop and think when you see a group shot that they're all squished together. But when you're doing it, it feels like, my gosh, this must look stupid. Then you look at the picture, it looks normal. Media creates its own reality that is not always reality. What I'm trying to say is the movie shots.
It needs to tell a lie. It needs to tell a lie so that we see that which looks true.
Exactly. And that's why most of these TV reality shows are ultimately exposed as being frauds. Because when they do try to make a reality show by running video, they're boring. They're boring. Real life is boring when captured on video or film, unless you happen to catch somebody falling off a pier into the water, or riding a bike on a hill and turning it upside down. You know, all those stupid, you know, they call them fails. But they have to start scripting them, and they have to start contriving situations. And all of a sudden, reality TV is just another form of scripted comedy or drama. And there's nothing more to it, because how long could they keep running video on people without getting anything that makes any sense? It's a weird syndrome in the arts. And you change one platform for another, you got to change the lie. For example, stage actors that have never been in the movies, when they get a film role, all of a sudden they have to rethink how they present themselves, because the camera in your face is very different than projecting to somebody in the back row.
Tone it down.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't be screaming.
Television television captures every move on your face. If you're a talking head on CNN or Fox, and you raise an eyebrow or you roll your eyes.
Yeah, every little twitch.
Every twitch is big, whereas on radio, if you don't really exaggerate, you come across as quite dull.
It sucks the life out, not having the image there. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how the brain merges sound, and I don't quite understand this, but I do this with the grandkids. You take video all the time. Occasionally, I will use the record app on my phone and just make an audio recording. And somehow when I play that back, the kids don't want to look at the videos. They have no interest. But they hear their voices in a standalone, and they stop and they sit down and they listen. Now, what is that all about?
It has to do with the differences between how the brain absorbs input through the ear as opposed to through the eye. There is a definite differential in the processes, and that's the answer to your question. And that's why radio still exists in the age of screens and video. Radio still
exists. Why? Because it has something, because there is this drama that you can feel when you're listening to the radio, particularly that 3 a.m. kind of, you know, if you're hearing something spooky in the middle of the night, if you're hearing a signal come in from 600 miles away and you're kind of in awe that you can even be listening to what's going on in Indianapolis, then there's a wonder and a bigness to the sound that's coming through that video can't replicate.
Mm-hmm. And also, even in this modern era where you have video telephones now called Zoom or Skype, I find sometimes I just want to forego that whole screen thing, because I find it takes away from my ability to really communicate with somebody. You're looking at them. They're looking at you. You get fatigued, because if you look away from the screen, it looks like you're not interested. Whereas in a conversation like this, you have no idea. My eyes could be wandering off somewhere or whatever. If we were doing a television conversation right now, we'd have to go through all of this rigmarole to appear engaged with each other. That really has nothing to do with the essence of our minds communicating directly into the minds of the listeners.
That's why radio is so much more honest. That's what I love about it, that you don't, because to do a TV scene, you have to light, you have to do makeup, you have to make sure everybody's on the same height and on the same plane with each other. Like, there's all this stuff to create the impression that something's going on. Instead of just, you know, we talk, people call in, and it's all spontaneous and intimate and true.
It's mind to mind, and it goes in through the ear, not the eye. And it's really, it's a wonderful, wonderful way to create intimacy and to really communicate. That is not to take away from the old saying, a picture is worth a thousand words, and it's not to take away from the benefits of video. I'm not knocking it. I'm just simply saying that the audio media experience, if you're listening to music on the radio as opposed to watching it on a video, if you're listening to somebody talking on the radio, or you're just having an old-fashioned phone conversation without the whole Skype thing, not knocking it, but there's something
you can
different.
Knock it if you want.
Well, I'm not knocking it, because sometimes I want to see my grandkid. I want to make faces. I want to visit with somebody. I just can't do it for very long. Can't have a long it's work, because you have to stare at a camera. First of all, you have to stare at a camera that's not where the person is. You cannot make eye-to-eye contact very easily
right
on Skype or Zoom. You know that. And So many of the I've done my fair share of talking heads on CNN, on Fox, on MSNBC, on C-SPAN. I do that. And you're staring at the camera, talking to somebody, trying in your head to act like you're really looking at them and they're looking at you and neither of you see each other.
Isn't that the strangest effect? Yeah. You're looking at a camera, but if you're not staring at that camera, the people watching at home are convinced you're not looking at them the way you're supposed to be.
Exactly. That you're disengaged, that you're sneaky, that it's crazy. So you learn the art of seeming to be engaged when all you're doing is staring at a camera, in some cases a robotic camera. There's not even a camera person running it.
Yeah.
Well, so this is all interesting media
stuff. Cameramen. Okay, let us pause briefly. We'll continue with Michael Harrison coming up on WTIC. WTIC, Michael Harrison here from Talkers Magazine. So one of the things that you do at Talkers, Michael, is compile a list of big stories, the things that people are talking about in the talk media each week.
What do you think is the biggest story this week?
I think Biden choosing his vice presidential pick is number one.
Absolutely. That is by far the biggest story this week. And had that not happened this week, the big story this week would have been the debate over the post office and Donald Trump, the battle between the post office, the USPS, and Trump regarding the efficacy of mail-in
ballots. It's hard to do a whole sentence without the word efficacy.
I have to work it in at least once per hour. The efficacy of the U.S. Postal Service to deliver ballots without incompetence and or fraud. And that's the other topic. The third topic this week that's been on the minds of Americans has been schools and how to open them safely, if it can even be done.
Schools out forever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe we should just close school for a year. Everybody's be equal. The kids will have a wild year. Make them do community service. And then, everybody will start college or their job or living in their mother's basement 1 year later.
What's number five?
I don't remember. I don't have it in front of me. Let me dig it up. Hey, I'll find it. Give me talk while I'm doing this.
Sure. I have no problem doing that. There was a story today where the Postal Service has issued a warning to 46 states that they may not be able to handle the volume of ballots in the fall and get them there on time to be counted.
Wow. Okay, here we go. I'm taking a look now okay, number one topic is Kamala Harris. Two is mail-in voting, school opening challenges. Number four is COVID-19 stats and projections.
COVID.
Right, health care and the vaccine race. Number six, race relations, urban unrest, homelessness. Number seven, the economy, business opening struggles, stimulus discussions. When are we going to get our next check? I want more money. U.S.-China relations at eight, Israel and the UAE agreement. That's a big deal. And number 10, we have, the QAnon conspiracy theory. It seems that a woman who is her name is Marjorie Taylor Greene, and she's a QAnon advocate. And she won the GOP primary for Congress in a very Republican district. We're going to have a member of Congress.
Yeah, she's expected to. Well, it's about time, don't you think?
That a QAnon advocate is in Congress?
Q for Congress. It's pithy.
Gotcha. And hey,
it's got to happen.
If the slogan works, who cares what it stands for? You know,
if the slogan fits, you must elect. All right, Michael Harrison. Thank you.
Have a good one, everybody. Really have a great weekend. Thank you, Todd.
Michael Harrison, we'll see you next week.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.